Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station where we help those with ADHD pay attention to attention, with your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Topper.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Copper. Our topic tonight, the impact of perfume and petroleum on ADHD. And with us in our virtual studio is the Elaine Taylor-Kloss. I could not think of anybody better to pick for this. And it's kind of funny because I tell you what, Elaine, let's just take the mystery out of the of everything right now. When I called you up and said, let's do a show on perfume and petroleum, its impact on ADHD, I think your response is, what are you talking about? Perfume and petroleum? What's that all about?
Right? Look, it sounds great. Let's do it. What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, you know, that's the story of my life, Elaine. It's, Jeff, what are you talking about? And when I explain it, sometimes it goes, oh, I kind of get it. So everybody, the background on this is I was a high adventure scout master and a life to eagle mentor coach. What that means is that in Boy Scouts, the boys, they go through this stuff and they get to life scout. And at some point in time, they have to go do a community service project all on their own. And the idea really is it's great if you can get this thing done before perfume comes along and petroleum, meaning they can drive, because when that happens, they get very distracted and it's very hard. Many scouts made it to life but never made it to Eagle because they got distracted by perfume and petroleum. And that makes all the sense in the world, right, Elaine?
Yep.
Now that you understand what I'm talking about, it makes some sense. So, everybody, real quick, tonight is Wednesday, May the 3rd in the year 2017 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Some quick announcements. Elaine and I are just now recovering from the ADHD Professionals Conference that was in Reston, Virginia. We had a great time. For those that were there, it was great seeing you. And we had a bunch of really good ideas as a spawn of some of that. So you'll be hearing some of that in the shows to come. The CHAD conference, it's time to start focusing on that. That's November the 9th to the 11th. For newbies, CHAD stands
for
Children.
In the hot Atlanta, Georgia, I just want to say.
That, you got home field advantage this year.
I do,
it's
indeed.
Like right
I'm very excited. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Anyway, CHAD stands for Children and Adults with Hyperactivity. Hyperactivity Attention Deficit Disorder, and they're the largest not-for-profit organization that advocates on behalf of those with ADHD. In fact, we're really thrilled of our relationship. Tonight's show is being brought to you by CHAD, and we've actually got a real quick tip that we're going to air, so let's do that, and we'll get into the meat of the show. So here we go.
Are you considering a medication holiday for your child? Possible benefits include time for a growth spurt unaffected by medication and relief from side effects. Be sure to weigh the benefits and the drawbacks because ADHD symptoms will return. And always discuss any changes with your child's health care provider first. For more information, visit the CHAD website, helpforadhd.org, H-E-L-P, the number 4, ADHD.org.
Thank you, CHAD, for bringing that message in for all our listeners out there. We are so proud of the fact that they make these shows happen along with our other advertisers. And many of you are looking for, like, CHAD, what's that? I can become a member, but what do I get? I would encourage you not to pay attention to that. Pay attention to the fact that a healthy CHAD is great because they advocate on behalf of those with ADHD. They're the ones on Capitol Hill that are talking to the legislators. They're talking to the regulatory bodies. We've done lots of shows even about how they can impact the definition of disability on some very important legislation and or the interpretation of that. So that's the reason you should be a CHAD member first. The benefits are really secondary, and it's really not that much. So I encourage you to go to chadd.org. Also, go check out that website because they got information on the conference that, again, is in Atlanta, Georgia, where Elaine Taylor-Kloss is from, where Impact ADHD from, so they got a home field advantage. And so really quickly, I'm proud tonight to have Elaine. She is a healthcare advocate, a writer, public speaker. She deals with families with complex kids, which is, I mean, really important. It's not easy what she does, but she's got some insight. She's not somebody who's just talking about theory. She lived it first and now is learning about kind of translating the two together. Her experience as a co-parent with her husband, David, and their ADHD family of five led Elaine to become a parenting coach and a voice of parents of children with ADHD and other learning emotional issues. She's the co-founder of Impact ADHD, a global support training and coaching resource for parents and kids with ADHD and related challenges. She's a consultant for the American Academy for Pediatrics in their effort to improve pediatric diagnosis for treatment of ADHD. And she serves as a volunteer. I do say volunteer on the National Board of CHAD, chairing the Affiliate Services Committee. She's a co-author of Parenting ADHD Now, Easy Intervention Strategies to Improve Kids with ADHD. And she's co-creator of SanitySchool.com, an online behavior management training for parents. And her website is ImpactADHD.com. If you go there and you do /free gifts, you can get some great free things. And so, Elaine, so great to have you back on the show.
It is always fabulous to be here. Thank you. And thanks. You made me sound great.
Well, you are great. You're spectacular. We go back a long time. I think it's coming up on 10 years, I think, pretty soon. We'll have to have an anniversary show between the two of us. So I teed this up because you're an expert in this world, and I'm kind of a semi-expert because I've got teens, and I know how difficult it is of how to manage this. And the focus of this show is I use the little playoff of Boy Scouts is because your kids with ADHD are growing. ADHD is very much the ability to self-regulate, to pause and override their automatic responses. Developmentally, they're a couple years behind. And then all of a sudden you throw puberty on top of that and menstrual cycles for girls. And I think that just makes things a heck of a lot more difficult. And if you're a parent of a challenging kid with this, it's not an easy thing. And I really want the parents to know this is not simple. You guys are doing great work for what you're doing, because if it was simple, then you wouldn't be listening to this radio show now, would they? Right?
That is so true.
And so it's really not a piece of cake. So just can you talk about just perspective, frame this out? I mean, these kids with ADHD, they really do have the – It's hard for them from the get-go because of the condition to actually pause and stop and think about what they're doing, which makes it really difficult.
Well, I mean, you know, so many things came up for me just as you were sort of introducing the notion. And the first was that this concern that parents have around managing kids with ADHD and puberty starts way before they hit puberty, at least especially for the girls. Because, you know, you got a 10, 11-year-old girl, you know at some point this kid's going to get her period. And if she's melting down, you know, every time she hears the word no or, you know, something doesn't go her way, you know, it can be really sort of daunting for a parent to think about how on earth is she going to handle it when she's actually menstruating. So the fear can start really early for parents. Like, what is this going to be like? And how do I help a kid who's struggling to self-regulate to manage a chemical process that's sort of throwing you off balance? Right.
Well, in that fear is emotional self-regulation, because we've done some shows where we interviewed Autumn Zatani from Sesame Street talking about self-regulation, emotional self-regulation. Mm-hmm. And when you feel threatened, you go into that fight, flight, or freeze, and it's funny because you can't even remember what you know that works. So when you get into that fear mode, you're like paralyzed and you're stuck.
That's right. That's right. And so parents, I mean, it starts before they hit puberty, and then when they start going through these changes and they start behaving in ways that are just completely unexpected, you know, the kids are surprised at the way they're behaving, the parents are surprised at the way they're behaving, and nobody really knows what to do about it, right? Because it's so off. It's so out of sync with what they've come to expect.
Wow. I love doing interviews with you, because I think we always come into this when we collide and something really cool comes out. And you said everybody's kind of surprised at how they're behaving.
Yeah.
And that's kind of I'm going to digress here. Hopefully I can kind of keep this thought. So if I get lost here, Lane,
I'll bring you back.
Thank God. So when my oldest son was back when he was 15, one day I came in, I was frustrated with him. And I mean, you know, don't scream at your kids. And I'm ranting and raving. And I look at him, you know, like in the middle of my rant, of course, he's being silent. And my mother always told me never scream at kids, because when you do, they're actually in control of the conversation.
Yep,
and so
true.
Anyway, I'm sitting there and all of a sudden I stop. I don't know what the hell enabled me to pause. And I looked at him thinking, this kid's going through puberty. So all these hormones have been released into his body to change, you know, his voice and his thought and the way he thinks. And I'm going, he's intoxicated with hormones. How stupid am I? I'm screaming at a drunk. And I was surprised at my behavior because I was enraged and I couldn't control myself. And I'm screaming at a drunk. Again, I'm metaphorically saying that.
Not really drunk. Yeah,
with hormones.
I got it.
And I'm going, I'm screaming at somebody who's intoxicated. I'm dumb enough to think that he's going to listen to me. And my behavior surprised me. I mean, I was having as much a problem as self-regulating as he was.
Right. Well, and so here's the flip side of that, right? I will never forget my daughter coming inside. And she was in middle school, so right in these hot and happening years. And it was the first time in her life that she had ever really been taught about 9/11. Now, she had heard about it. She sort of knew about it. It wasn't that she was completely ignorant, but it was the first time they had ever really addressed it in school in a real constructive way. And she was blown away by it. And she came home, and she was slamming and screaming and raging and going upstairs. And at one point, I'm like, "What, sweetie, what's going on?" She's like screaming at the top of her lungs, "I don't know what's wrong," right? And she was completely out of control. And, you know, it took me a while to figure out when I finally sort of got her calm and figured out what was going on, that she had been triggered by this new awareness she had, and she was so sad and so upset and so hurt. But the part that really stuck with me was when she screamed at the top of her lungs, "I don't know why I'm screaming."
Yeah, wow.
And she didn't. She was just unable to control the emotional intensity that was raging in her body and her brain. And that was a huge wake up for me because it helped me see, whoa, she's not being rude or disrespectful, or she's out of control. And so my first job here is to slow down and try to have some compassion for how hard it must feel for her to be out of control and help her regain control first. We call it reclaim the brain, right? When the brain is triggered,
okay.
When you're in fight, flight, or freeze, first thing you got to do is recognize you're triggered in the first place,
yep.
And then you got to reclaim the brain. And until you do that, there is no rational conversation that's going to happen. It's not possible. But that's a hard thing to do when you're triggered and they're triggered. And they do a really good job of triggering us at this phase.
Yeah, I tell you what, reclaim the brain. Elaine,
yeah.
This is a great stopping point. I want to come back and I want to talk about this because there's an awareness issue here. And to me, there's a ubiquitous process that does this. And it's not a structure. I mean, it's not a thing. It's a process that you take people through. So we're going to come back and talk about that. Before we go, everybody, you already know from this interview that Elaine's brilliant. So you got to go check out her and her brilliant partner at impactadhd.com. And if you put impactadhd.com/free gift, you can probably walk away with some great takeaways. So with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an EDGE Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function challenge make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more or call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE to get your free college success guide.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Managing ADHD is about pausing before you ponder and proceed. This opportunity to practice pausing is being brought to you by digcoaching.com. The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com ADHD.com/ATR.
And now back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Elaine Taylor-Claus having a great conversation about ADHD, self-regulation, puberty, and the list kind of goes on. And before the break, we were just kind of talking about the dynamic and really kind of acknowledging this is not an easy space. And actually, you know, Elaine, next week we're doing a show or I'm taping a show pretty soon with Ari Tuckman that talks about satisfaction, and the root of it is expectations. And sometimes if you say this is really kind of hard, and everybody knows it, you make this adjustment to perfect, because this is not easy. This is an art. And beforehand, we were talking about how I was surprised at my behavior, and your daughter was like, I don't know why I'm screaming. And then you started talking about reclaiming the brain, because when you get into this emotional thing, you got to reclaim the brain. And that is, if it was that easy and we could snap our fingers, we would not be having this conversation. So just talk to us a little bit more about what that's all about.
Okay. So you had mentioned earlier the whole notion of fight or flight, fight, flight, freeze, whatever,
yep.
however you want to put it. And so
yep.
what happens when we get stressed or the hormones take over, the cortisol rages, however you want to describe it, define it, is we get triggered. Simple language, somebody's getting triggered. And when you're triggered,
yep.
we call it amygdala hijack. So the amygdala
yep.
is the primitive part of the brain. It hijacks the brain. The frontal lobe is no longer in control, and the primitive brain has taken over. In order to get back to a rational brain, to a reasonable conversation where you can think and reason and anticipate and all of that, you have to reclaim the brain from the amygdala. You have to get back from that hijacked state. And in order to do that, there's sort of two phases to it. The first is to recognize that you're triggered in the first place. And, you know, when you're sitting there screaming at your
yep.
son, you're not
yep.
recognizing that. And then all of a sudden you have this epiphanous moment where you went, wait a minute, I'm screaming at a
yep.
drunk. Right?
Yep.
And so you recognized you were triggered. And then the second phase is to reclaim the brain physiologically. So it's actually physical. And usually if you notice when you get triggered, whether you do a trigger journal or, you know, there are a lot of different ways that people pay attention to it. If you notice it, you'll start to notice that you have some tells, some physical tells your body will give you when you're starting to get stressed. For me,
mm-hmm.
I rub my hands. I instead of rubbing my hands through my hair, I may start to sort of rub and pull my hair a little bit.
Yep.
Some people rub their temples. Some people rub their hands.
Yep.
Their hands get sweaty or they feel their heart racing. You know, the veritable hair on the back of your neck, right? Everybody's
yep.
got some physiological symptom that they're starting to get triggered.
Yep.
So if you can start to recognize your triggers, that's one way to begin to recognize when you're getting there, so that as soon as you recognize it, it sort of shortens the cycle and lets you respond to it quickly. And then the next part of it is to, once you recognize your triggers, is to know what calms you down, what does bring
yes.
you back to center. And you know, we encourage people to brainstorm a whole list of things and strategies that you can use. We know that drinking water, because you're dealing with a primitive brain here, water sends the message that you're safe, you're at the
mm-hmm.
water hole. So drinking water actually can calm people down. Unfortunately, caffeine, like coffee and sodas and stuff,
yep.
does not work. Tea doesn't
yep.
do it. But drinking
yep.
water can calm people down. Physical exertion, you know, wall push-ups,
yep.
walking up a hill,
yep.
Taking a shower, taking a break, you know, timeouts, deep breaths, all of those things are strategies that we can use to physiologically bring ourselves back to a calmer place and let the frontal lobe get back in charge.
So
that was a really quick version of it.
Brilliantly articulated. So so when you get into that state, when you got to reclaim your brain because your primitive brain has taken over and your executive functioning brain is no longer in control, and reclaiming
yep.
reclaiming your brain is effortful. It takes some energy.
Yes.
It's
consciousness
and it's time
and
consuming. It's time.
Yep.
This is everybody. If you think this is hard, it's because it's hard. It takes time. It takes energy, and it's a little bit frustrating. And as I described in my situation, is I had to reclaim my primitive brain because it was going nuts. And when your daughter is screaming like, I don't even know why I'm doing it, her thinking brain clearly isn't in control because it doesn't even know why it's doing it. And this is not easy as a parent. But the idea is, as you said, to reclaim the brain. You paused and began to calm down yourself and began to help your daughter down regulate as best you
yes.
can in the moment.
Good way to put it.
Because both of your executive function, we need to bring them back into the party so that we can begin to think. So we're not going to react to it because You talk about.
I want to add something here before you go someplace else because it's right on that. And that's that we have to downregulate. And if they're triggered, they may not want to. Right?
Ooh.
So they're triggered. And so they may be up for the fight. If they're in that fight place, just when you're like, okay, we got to calm down. No, I want to talk about it now. Right? So that's even harder. You can't have that conversation in the moment because they're not in a rational place to have it. So you need to have those conversations with your kid about what does that down regulation look like, what strategies you're going to use when you're not in the heat of the moment. Because in the moment, if they're fighters, they're going to want to take the bait and keep fighting. And our job is not to take the bait. Hard stuff.
Which is hard because now we're flipping the coin. Now, parent, you've got the same problem they do is you've got to self-regulate and not take the bait. So in a sense, the parent doesn't have ADHD, but we've got both sides of it trying to self-regulate in the moment when everybody's pushing each other's buttons, because if you take the bait, we're going to spin out of control. It's not going to help the situation. As hard as it is not to push the button, you got to resist not pushing the button.
Yeah, and it's hard not to put them over the edge when you're furious, right, or hurt or scared or whatever. Now, I mean, there are times where if there's real danger at place, that's got to be the precedent. You got to, you know, knock the kid out of the way of the moving vehicle. But for the most part, when we take the bait and allow ourselves to get triggered, as your mom said, they are now in control. And that's not going to serve anybody. Not that we need to be controlling our kids, but that the whole point is for everybody to have some sense of self-control. And
so
if we're not modeling it for them, it's going to be awfully hard for them to learn it.
So just to make it tangible, because as my mother had described, is when you are going on and on and on, they're in control because it's showing your willingness to negotiate to a certain extent. And the more you talk about it, and the more you go and you negotiate and you give in, they were actually kind of controlled to kind of manipulate you to get more of what you want. And I'm saying that because just to say that they're in control of it is, again, you're frustrated and you're looking for something and you're more apt either. Sometimes you get frustrated and you give up and they win totally, or they win that stuff. So again, the more you go on, as my mother described, the more it demonstrates to them your willingness to negotiate, they take advantage of you. So anyway,
you know,
let's go to,
just to finish with that. So Hal Runkle wrote a book called Scream-Free Parenting. And what he says is when you're screaming, what you're saying to your kids is, calm me down. And it's no longer about your kids and what's going on with you. Now it's about with them. Now it's about you. And a whole focus shifts from kid to adult. And our purpose here is to keep the focus on what's going on with the kid and not let them distract us back to us. Because they will trigger us and push our buttons so that the issue, we're no longer talking about whether they took the trash out or did their homework, because now we're talking about how they talk to us.
Okay, everybody, we are at the 23-minute mark. What you need to do is you need to go back to like the 21-minute and re-listen to everything Elaine said. Like about five times, write it down, put it on a sign on the wall because it was absolutely brilliant. It'll be quoted, I can guarantee you, tomorrow. and social media and some other things. So anyway, just go back and listen to it. But for now, we're going to go to a break. Again, to learn more about Elaine's brilliance, go to impactadhd.com. Actually, not to learn, not to hear more, but to go observe her brilliance, go there. And if you want to catch some free goodies, go to impactadhd.com. Free stuff. And with that, we'll be right back after
free
these
gift.
Messages.
Free gift.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You can't go off to college with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential. You can also call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE and get a free college success guide.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk Radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here at the Elaine Taylor Kloss, experiencing the brilliance of Elaine Taylor Kloss. And as I always said, I love doing shows with you because they always come out better than I could ever dream. And this has been nothing but gold. I know this is going to be on the top five of my favorites all time. So I want to talk about this a little bit, Elaine, is that you're going through this stuff and you can downregulate your emotions. And now we're going back to the attention side of things a little bit. And you're an adult with ADHD and you go out and you read all these books and they're talking to you about these things. But, you know, ADHD, as I learned from Dr. Quinn a long time ago, it manifests very different in boys and girls. And I've also learned over the years is that the menstrual cycle will ebb and flow in terms of estrogen, and estrogen can help you focus and pay attention to it. And when it's reduced, it's more difficult. And so we can, as a parent, now you could have two, and it gets kind of crazy. Can you just talk about your perspective on some of that stuff a little bit? Because it gets kind of crazy, particularly if you got a boy and a girl in the house with it, because they could be, it can manifest very differently.
Well, you know, it can manifest differently, and it's gonna, part of it is hormone. Part of me is like, does it really matter what the cause of it is? You know, we just know that it's going to be different for each child. And, you know, if a child is more likely to fight or freeze, you're going to have a different manifestation. And with girls, at least, there is some cyclical nature to it. So you can begin to sort of watch the pattern. I know lots of dads who document their wives and daughters' menstrual cycles so that they know when to be a little bit more compassionate and when to make sure there's ice cream in the house and, you know, when to not take the bait. But I think we need to be careful not to assume that those same cycles are happening with our boys just because we can't see them, right? I think that we I've watched, you know, I have two girls and a boy, and so watching the boy differently, he definitely has highs and lows. He definitely has more emotional times and less. I can't say that I've mapped it, but I'm not that, you know, it's not something I pay that close attention to. But I do know that, you know, whether boys are supposed to cry or not, you know, teenage kids get emotional and their feelings are intense. And we need to honor that, recognize that, respect that, expect that, and not sort of take that, well, he shouldn't because he's 16, he should know better, any of that. Life is intense for them. Like my son came down, he's in exams, he came down yesterday morning and he said, you know, this is hard. And it is hard. He said, this is hard, guys. You know, and it is. Getting through the end of a school year is really hard for kids with ADHD. Pushing through the end, completion, it's hard. Right? Yep. So I think whatever the manifestation of it, it's our job as parents to recognize that these kids are not willfully being rude or disobedient or crazy, that they're struggling often mightily to feel some sense of control in a brain and body that feels completely out of their control.
Absolutely. And I'm just slowing this down for a second because we've been ramped up and we've been talking about emotions and the difficulty. We hope that we are acknowledging to the parents that are listening, this is not an easy thing to do for the child or the adolescent or yourself. And the more you can acknowledge it and be able to stop and kind of calm down, because I think the key, and I'm be anxious for your thoughts on this, is to be able to be calm. And it's really all about observation, because everybody's a little bit different. Because as you said, you know, it doesn't really matter, but you have to meet your child where they are. And if they don't like to talk about these things, that's another challenge. And sometimes they are insatiable. Some are pleasers and others are more defiant, and it really runs the gamut. But the trick really is to calmly slow down and witness and observe the individual differences of your kid. And then the best you can at trial and error, try to crack the code so that you can kind of get to them. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, here's what came up. We teach a strategy that's a pretty general universal strategy for problem solving, but I think it's really applicable here because you hit it right on the head, and that's, you talked about acknowledgement. And our kids really need to be seen and recognized for what's going on for them and not be made to feel they're wrong, by it. And so we call it the ACE principle or the ACE system. And ACE stands for acknowledgement, compassion, and then explore your options. And I may have talked about this on a previous call or not. I'm not sure. But I think it's really, really applicable here because first they need to be acknowledged. And if you can just say, wow, you're feeling really upset, you're feeling really angry, it looks like you're furious, it looks like you're having a hard time, whatever that is, just seeing them and being seen by their parent is really powerful for them. And then having compassion for it. I hate it when I feel that way. Or, I bet it's really hard for you. I can sort of remember what it was like when I was there too, and I can imagine that this is really hard. Just that recognition for them, that's sort of the core of empathy, is acknowledgement and compassion, right? And then you can get, after you sort of do that and you reconnect with each other on a relationship level, right? You find where you're in line with each other. Then you can explore the options. What do we need to do differently? What needs to happen? How are we going to address this? But if you start by problem solving before you connect, it's really hard for them to trust and it's hard for them to feel seen and recognized. And they need that at this stage of development. They are struggling with control and they need what makes them feel, part of what makes them feel control is to be in control, is to feel seen and acknowledged.
And when I was listening to you on this, I had this flooding feeling. I was having a hard time paying attention. I know you're saying some great things about it and it's there, but as you talk about acknowledgement, compassion, and exploration, I think I got that right at the end, is all I could think about, Elaine, was a recent conversation you and I had about the yes and conversation. Because uh-huh. when you go in, because we were doing a little thing on active listening skills and playing off of improv. And if you say no to your kid to everything, it's going to dead end you. Both of you are going to go nowhere. And the idea is to say, to acknowledge them, like I acknowledge it, have some compassion, yes, and let's kind of go explore. But I was listening to you, Elaine, I was thinking, how many parents are like, yeah, that sounds really good. Acknowledge, compassion, exploration, but... And
right.
That yes, but is if you can feel yourself saying that, what you were saying before, I think when I was, this is coming bombarding my head, is that you have this acknowledgement, compassion, exploration, but you got to come from the right place to be safe. But if you hear yourself saying but in the back of your head, you've got to relax and let the but go and say, well, yes, and kind of go forward, because that but is a very adversarial type thing. You don't have a lot of time to rehash that whole concept, but can you just comment on that a second?
Well, I think you're right on target. If I were to sort of synopsize the fundamental, if I had to choose one strategy for parents to use in raising teenagers, and that's really what we're talking about, it's to focus on the relationship. And, to not worry about being right, not always worrying about making sure it gets done and all of those panic feelings, scary things that we as parents want to make sure they're ready for adulthood and all of that. If we stay connected, if we stay in relationship with them, then when they are beginning to deal with some of the things we want them to deal with, and they may be doing that at a later age than their peers, they are more likely to come to us, they're more likely to ask for input, they're more likely to talk to us if we stay connected. And our kids are going to learn late and get to some things later than their peers. That's just the nature of the way their brains are wired. And so the most important thing we can do through these pubescent years is to stay in relationship with our kids and stay connected to them. Nothing is more important than that.
I years ago, I used to hear love will conquer all, just love your kids. And as I started to study attention, I kind of twisted that around to it's pay attention to your kids. It's really, to me, kind of, it's slightly different. You can emotionally love your kids, but that doesn't mean when they want to talk that you're actually going to sit down and listen. Sometimes I think it's really more when they want to talk, you need to listen to them talk.
Yeah, I got some advice before my oldest daughter became a teenager. Her friend's mom, who had an older daughter, said, start napping, because if they want to come talk to you at 1 o'clock in the morning, you need to be available, and that's what's going to happen. And sure enough, they want to start talking when you go to say goodnight at, 11, 12 o'clock at night.
Yep.
they're on a different cycle, and we have to, you said it earlier, we have to meet them where they are and remember that at the end of the day, that relationship with them, that's what it's about. That's what's going to carry into adulthood. That's going to what's going to be what helps them be successful is if they have somebody who believes in them and cares about them and loves them unconditionally. And that doesn't mean we agree with everything they do, but we believe in them and see what's possible for them. They need that from us as much as anything. That's what will help them become the resilient adults that we need them to be, that they want to be.
So picture this, parents out there. You're out there, and you've been doing this for a really long, hard time. You're sleep deprived. You're really tired, and you're coming home from a long day of work, and there was a surprise. There's a lot of pressure on you. You're ruminating about a problem. You're absolutely exhausted. You're going to bed, and all of a sudden, your teen wants to talk. The last thing that you, I mean, you're like, you don't have the patience for it because you got your own issues of the day. You're told that you have to listen to it, but honestly, you're exhausted. You want to go to bed. Can't we do this tomorrow? And it is the hardest thing on the planet to sit there and not only listen to them, but pay attention to what they're saying. And if anybody tells you this is an easy thing to do, they're smoking crack. And what the one thing I hope any parent gets out of this is they're listening to this and we're meeting you where they are. This is not an easy thing to do, but if you can focus on those things, and you can downregulate, you can be there for them, you'll do more right. And if you do those little things over a long period of time, when they, as I say this, I had a dumbass attack apparently. I think it was June. I forget the year. I went to bed one night. I was the smartest, strongest dad. And then all of a sudden, I had a dumbass attack. And then when my son hit 20, all of a sudden, you're like, Dad, you've been getting smart lately. And they go into this tunnel, I say, and that if you do the right stuff, yeah, when they come out the other side, hopefully it's there. But it's difficult because there's not a lot of feedback when they're in that tunnel.
You do start getting smarter when they hit their 20s. And yep. Here's the other great thing that comes is you start hearing these things come out of their mouths that you didn't even know that they heard, right? It's like, ooh, wait, you got that 6 years ago? You got that 8 years ago? Like, they start saying and doing things like, huh, you don't want to say anything because you don't want to, you know, push your luck. But they start to do things. It's like, okay, it's on some level they were paying attention. It's great.
Everybody, there's the good and the bad too, but not to say,
yeah,
but
exactly.
It's really kind of cool when they end up kind of pairing that stuff. So, Elaine, to wrap this up, any final comments?
Yeah, there's one other point I want to mention, and yep. I think this is salient at this stage, is that a lot of our kids, as we, you know, we've mentioned a couple of times, they have developmental delay of some kind. They are sort mm-hmm. of developmentally, organizationally, emotionally maybe behind their peers. They'll get there eventually, but they're a little behind, which may mean that they missed learning something at some point in their development when it was being taught. So, you know, first grade, they teach you to sit in your seat, and our kids aren't ready to learn to sit in their seat in first grade. Or third grade, you know, whatever the strategies are that they teach kids along the way, when to learn to use a planner, when to learn to do this or that. And at some point, all of our kids have missed some critical pieces of their education that we think that they know because they were taught it, but they didn't really absorb it at the time. And
mm-hmm.
all of this sort of can come crashing together in these pubescent years when they're in high school and all of a sudden school matters and relationships matter and there's risky behaviors, there's all this other stuff, the stakes are higher. And so I guess what I want to say is to remember that if it feels like they're really not thinking, it may be that they missed some piece of their training along the way, and there may be some need to retrain respectfully and cautiously, because you don't want to treat them like they're two, right? But
yep.
to recognize that sometimes they may have missed something along the way, and there may be an opportunity to sort of teach them in a new way something that you thought they had learned, but they may not have.
Exceptional.
And I know that's a little
put.
Ambiguous, but I think it's really helpful.
No, I think it is. When you see it play out in your kid, you'll know exactly what Elaine's talking about.
True.
But you have to look for it. I mean,
it's
kind of like, you know,
you missed that. And Anthony,
yeah.
The best example, I remember when my daughter was 17, she heard me describing ADHD and executive function to a neighbor, to a friend. And she looked at me and she said, "You mean I'm not a really immature 17, I'm just a really mature 14-year-old? And I went, "Yes, I guess sort of like that." She went, "Oh," and it was like she could be with that. And then she
wow.
was open to learning things that she had missed along the way because now she realized she had missed it. It was really
wow.
cool. Yeah,
you know,
it's great.
It's kind of funny. It's like I always like going through that store, Brookstone, that's always in the mall, because I always walk in and
yeah.
go, "Oh, that's what that is." Anyway, it kind of surprised me, all the unique gadgets. So anyway, The last thing that I'd like to say before I could close out the show is I really, if you're a parent and you're listening to this show, you care.
Yeah.
You love your kids.
Yep.
You're searching for examples. You are, your heart's in the right place. You're doing the right thing. What we hope tonight is that we met you where you are. If this was simple, nobody would care what Elaine and I think. And even sometimes I got relevant, right? But the point really is that you're here, you care, you're doing the right things, you're doing the best you can. Every kid is really different. I remember I was pissed off when we came home with my first child without the manual. And I went back and said, we're not leaving the hospital the second time without the manual to the kid. And we did it again. And it's not a ubiquitous manual. It's his individual. So again, if you're listening to the show, this isn't easy. And there's a lot of other people that are sharing this experience, but know that you're a good person. You're a good parent because you're listening to that. So with that, Elaine, you crushed it.
Thanks.
Again.
It was a pleasure as usual.
And we're going to have to, I'm already trying to think of another show. I've actually got some ideas. So anyway, with that, everybody, we hope you've enjoyed this edition of Attention Talk Radio. Go learn more about Elaine at impactadhd.com. And Elaine, thanks again for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. Everybody, catch us next week. Take care.